Welcome to Giving an Ass, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, Harold Felder, and today we are going to talk about ethics. I have with me a guest who's going to help us with this topic because this is not a forte of mine. His name is Steve Groffalo.
That's correct.
I hope I didn't butcher his name. Let me tell you a little bit about Steve. He has an undergraduate in criminal justice with an emphasis in government and politics. He has taught ethics in a number of churches and different group settings, so you have experience in this type of stuff. So.
Yeah, as well as
ethics. Is there anything I left out of your background that you would like to fill in?
I think that's about it, except for I'm an apologetic student.
I think you're missing something. You're leaving something out.
What?
She's in the control room.
Oh, excuse me. All credit goes to my unbelievable wife. Speaking in finite terms, my wife is the wind beneath my wings.
See how I help you out?
I appreciate that.
All right, see? Well, all right, Steve, let's just go ahead and get to it. What are ethics?
Harold, ethics are, in a nutshell, ethics are a group of standard and a value, a set of standards and values, okay? So when I say an ethic is a standard, that means it's unchanging. So it's a set of standards or a standard and a set of values. What happens is you have there's two kinds of ethical systems that we can get into. But when I say an ethical standard, it has to be based on something, and then from there you have a standard by which to define what is right and what is wrong. So I would say, in a nutshell, it is basically a set of standards or values.
Well, you mentioned something about right and wrong. How does that fit in there again?
Okay, in an ethical system, there's basically about six or seven different kinds of ethical models fall under two basic schools. One is the deontological and the other is the teleological.
You know you got to break that down. Right?
Exactly. And I'll say this. Remember, the deontological begins with a D. So that, in simply put, it means it's duty-centered. The teleological is end-centered, okay? The Christian ethic falls under the deontological because it's duty-centered, and so the ends do not justify the means, where the teleological is the non-Christian model, and that, in a nutshell, what that means is that the ends do justify the means. So long as you accomplish the end, or what you want to accomplish, it kind of how you got there doesn't really matter, and as we get going, I can give you some examples of that.
Yeah. Well, before we get to that though, because I've talked to you about this, and I know that you have a passion for ethics, and this is something that most people don't think about or care about, or just don't even they just go about their daily lives. But you have this passion. How did you develop this passion for ethics?
Yeah, it's funny because I've always had the passion, and I think going to graduate school at Southern Evangelical Seminary has helped me further define that. But I look back and I say, where did this passion come from? And I think ultimately God is the center of that. But having said that, when I was a little boy in New York City, in Brooklyn, my grandpa, who I loved dearly, Grandpa Salvatore Damari, and he would come up to me and he'd always tell me stories. And Grandpa would always say, Steve, the bad guys always get caught. And I'd say, Grandpa, okay. He says, robbers, bad guys always get caught. I said, well, Grandpa, what happens if they get away? They got a getaway car. What happens then? He says, they always get caught, whether it's the police and they catch them. I said, so on. It's like the little boy who says, well, how come or how? So finally, I said, well, Grandpa, what happens if they never get caught? Grandpa goes, God sees everything. And even if they make it through this life, eventually they're going to have to face God. And that was I can remember that as if it was yesterday. And obviously my mother and my family and my wife all adhere to that. And so it's kind of always been a passion since a little boy.
That's amazing because I'm going to be honest with you. I took a class in ethics and I know how important it is. But when I sat in that class, it was just like my eyes were glazed over.
It could do that too.
I was like, oh my God, how long have I been in this class? 3 weeks? It's only been 20 minutes.
All the ontologicals?
All the different, you were talking about the different systems.
Right.
All right, well, let's make this practical. You were talking about, all right, examples, like you were talking about the duty center and the
end center.
So could you give a couple examples of these?
Sure. A good example, I'll give you two examples or two classes of examples or samples. The first one would be under the deontological, being the duty centered, we'd say little boy falls into a pond. Under the deontological, being duty centered, I have a duty of to go ahead and try to save that boy or that child, whatever. I have to make sure that I try to attempt to save his life. Even if I am not successful in doing so, it was a good act because the duty requires that I try to preserve life. Okay, under the end-centered, it says is gonna be end-centered, okay, the teleological. And so if I try to rescue the boy and the boy, for some reason, does not survive, it wasn't a good act. Now, most people would say, well, that's kind of crazy. We'd all try to save a little boy. But I'm breaking that down in rudimentary terms. Let me give you a better example, okay? Let's take politics, because most people think of ethics in terms of politics and business. So I'll use a political, because I think our political realm in this country and probably over the world and all cultures really lets you see ethics at its finest or not at its finest.
Right.
So I'll give you two examples. The first one is going to be, I really think up to the 70s and 80s, we had junk bonds. Remember, you didn't have junk bonds before
then. Milken, I remember that whole
Milken
thing.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
Yeah.
And then we got in the 90s, and I'm not a guy who blames the Clinton administration for everything, because I don't think Clinton was the cause for all things. I think he was a reflection, one thing, of that era of where our society was at, okay? But having said that, people always said, and I remember that, people kept on saying, man, it doesn't matter. Look what he's doing. Look at the economy. It doesn't matter how we got there.
Right.
The bottom line is, look at these great things, screaming economy, internet, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, people were saying, it's the economy, dummy. You know, bottom line is, we were enjoying prosperity, and it did not matter what we did to get there. Now, the whole Enron situation, the whole Martha Stewart, from a business point of view, same thing. That stuff didn't pop up in 2003. That stuff was cultivating from years prior to that. We just didn't wake up one day and say, let's be an end-centered. Not to say that didn't exist, but I'm talking socially speaking and what was acceptable and what was the mores that governed our business and government and I think as our society. Having said that, that's an example of a teleological ethic. Exactly. Now, a good example might be whether you agree with President Bush or not on the war in Iraq, for what he says or why he went into war. I'm not going to get into the subject of war, but I'll say the act. He felt duty-centered, whether you believe that he's, you know, whatever, you know, whether you believe him or not. He said, I went there to preserve life. People were being beaten, killed, poisoned, and being completely abused. And so we went there in part to free Iraq. And so he was duty-centered. And you can't say that's end-centered.
Right.
Because that's like a politician's nightmare. You can't say so anyways, some people might say, well, the response to 9/11 was one thing, but the bottom line is that was one heck of a political gamble if it was one.
Right.
So he went there for duty-centered reasons, in my opinion, and right. I believe that to be true. Another example, here's another great example. I love watching Fox National News, and crystal clear example. They have a gal on there, and she represents, and I love watching her, she represents the liberal side, and she says, they were asking her during the elections, and I can't recall her name, they said, and it was during the time where there was a scare on Medicaid from the seniors. They were trying to gain some swing votes for Florida. Okay, before the elections, because obviously it's a swing state.
Right.
So this big fear came out. Golly, they're going to have all their health benefits stripped away or broken down, and Bush is doing this and Bush is doing that. And so they interviewed this gal. She gets on there, and they're interviewing her, and they said, they go, so and so, let me ask this question. I mean, was it really right? Was it really right to scare the seniors into doing that for votes? And she says, well, Linda.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
You know,
when you make that voice.
I can't think of her voice. She goes, well, Linda, I know everybody in Washington, D.C. And I tell you, for maybe 2,000, 3,000 votes, no. But maybe for a 10 to 15% rise on our side, I'd have to say I think so. Mm. You see, what he's saying is, right. You know, if I didn't get enough votes, it wasn't worth it.
Right.
You know, but if it was, doesn't matter if we scared the dickens out of all the elderly in the whole country, long as I got the votes and won the state, doesn't matter. It was end-centered, not duty-centered.
Okay, so we have the two different models. We have the duty-centered, the end-centered. As Christians, well, all right, let me just ask you this. Which one is the correct one?
Okay, the deontological, well, you know, I always say there's two basic schools here that we're talking about.
Right.
And there's one correct school. Okay. Because one is, when I say correct, you know, you can have as many schools as you want, but the law of contradiction states that, you know, one's going to be true. There's one truth, and it's got to be absolute, and the rest of the stuff is relative.
Right.
So the Christian falls by nature and unapologetically into the deontological, the duty-centered. God calls us to do things, and some of those things, there's certain crimes of commission and certain crimes of omission.
Right.
To not save a little boy from you know, drowning is an omission. And then that gets into natural and divine law. We can talk about that if you like. But it definitely falls into the duty-centered.
Okay. Now, so that brings me to the next question you may have already touched on. Where do ethics come from?
That's a very good question. Very good question. It comes from one of two places. Okay? And I'm going to answer this two ways. It comes one of two places on a moral sense, okay, from a finite human sense, and that is either God or man. And you can take all of the models or schools that you want. It either falls under plain and simply God's way or man's way. Okay, if it comes from God's way, it's based on absolute truth.
Right.
Because remember when I defined an ethic as a set of values. Okay, think about it. We have standards in everything in this country. I mean, we have standards for how to, you know, if you're building a jet engine, how many times you torque a bolt or whatever it might be, or standards by which to get a degree. A standard is something that's unmovable. The other option is man. And last I checked, the only man that was perfect and never erred was Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ was God.
Right.
And the second person of the Godhead, the triune God. So having said that, you have two options. You either have an absolute standard or you have relativism. And so where do they come from? Either God or man.
Either God or man. And you're saying?
The correct way is God. Whether you know, truth and correctness. If you're saying where a correct and truthful ethic is the deontological model, it comes from God because it's impossible not to come from God because of an ethic is based on a standard. The only unchanging, the only all-truthful, all-powerful, but unchanging being in the universe and outside thereof is God. Man is always changing. Always changing. There's not a man outside of Jesus Christ I know that has walked a perfect life and that does not change. And so you see, God doesn't have any other option but to be perfect.
Right.
He can
do nothing else.
That's correct.
Yeah.
By his very nature. So when it comes down to it, you either have an absolute standard that doesn't change or you have relativism. Absolute truth, relativism.
Okay, now here's a question for you then. You're saying that the standard of ethic must be absolute. And it must be, you know, a standard that does not move. So if this is a standard that's an unchangeable standard, an absolute standard, then is God himself held accountable to the standard?
Excellent question. I love that question. Give you the answer here. Yes and no. First of all, God can't be held to anything other than himself, and he's not held, he just is. You see, we're held to standards because we have the standard and we have us because we're finite, okay? We're not infinite, we're not everywhere, we're not always have been. So we have a standard and we have us as people. And so we're held to that standard. Those are two separate things. God is infinite, simple beings, pure spirit, doesn't have parts. And so therefore, God is not, you see, you and I possess love. We possess justice. We possess many different things, many of the attributes that God is. See, God does not possess anything. God is love. God right. is justice. God, right. et cetera, et cetera. So when we say, you know, standard is based on a just principle, it's based on a God principle. Does that answer the
question? It answers the question, but I do want to like clarify, because we hear this a lot. You know, I mean, me and you, as seminary students and Southern Evangelical Seminary, this type of stuff comes up a lot, because people would say, you know, well, if something good because God says it's good, or is it good because it's good? Well, in other words, if anything that God does that automatically make it good?
Answer to your question is yes, because God is good. God is nothing other than good. Right. So if God is the standard, God is the ethic, God doesn't possess anything, including an ethic or a moral. He just is moral.
Right.
He's just a perfect moral. He's the only perfect standard. Now, having said that, there's two ways by which that our ethics, in a sense, can come to us. One is through, and I think some people may be familiar with natural law and divine, general revelation, special revelation. General revelation is God is made evident to all mankind. Whether you read the Bible or not, it's evident that, I mean, look at the complexity of the human being, the cosmological, you know, the creation of the universe, anthropic principle. You know, if the earth was tilted, a gazillion little facts like, well, if the earth was tilted 3 degrees this way, we'd all be a chunk of ice. If it went this way, well, we'd be cinders or less. And
right, right.
So anyways, having said that, those are, and God is evident in math, 2 + 2 = 4, doesn't matter. All languages, all times, 2 + 2 always equals 4, can't equal 5. That's, so some of that is, you see, certain things are in the Bible, in natural revelation, general revelation, natural law, and some things, in the Bible, and divine law, right, special revelation, some things in the Bible, the Bible's really the clearest and most exact source, and probably our best source
right.
for ethics, but it's not the only source, i.e. science and math and that type of thing.
Right.
So having said that, for example, Paul says in Romans 2, you know, even to the Gentile, back in his day, like they didn't have the New Testament, even to the Gentile, he's a law unto himself. He knows right from wrong. Because God has all mankind, men and women, know right from wrong. And that's just built into us. God built into us, even into the atheist, even into the Buddhist or the Muslim or the Jew or the, you name it, they all know right or wrong. Okay? That's just a given. That's natural law. The Bible doesn't create that. It just acknowledges that.
Right.
The Bible just acknowledges that natural law. Can't happen. You just can't not be. We cannot not know, as Budicheski says. But having said that, that's where I get into talking about when we get into ethical issues, I think everybody knows right from wrong. And I'll give you one last little tidbit. How we know we're right from wrong. One good way to show that all mankind knows instinctively the natural law, which is what is right from what is wrong, is that it is that reflex. Norman Geisler taught me this in class, is You want to see the natural law in action, go ahead and check someone's reflex. See an old lady, she's walking across the street in the Middle East. She falls down. A bus is coming. I don't care if you're Hezbollah or who you are. You're going to go and try to pick that lady up and save her. It's when you have to think about it that the human sin nature begins to
right.
distort that.
Right.
Now, if the Hezbollah sees the Jewish lady, okay, and then sees the Jewish star on her, he may lead the bus driver over. You
right,
know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
He may do that. But if he didn't know that, his natural instinct would be to try to save that lady.
Well, that brings me to a question. Are people less ethical today than they were generations ago?
I would say in action and many times in belief, absolutely. Yeah, people are acting less ethical today. Absolutely. You know, people always said, I was born in 1965, and if you look at the Supreme Court cases, you'll see how a lot of the moral fabric that was around in 60 6 to 65 was just chipped away by little. Having said that, I remember the arguments of, well, should we hand kids condoms? Why not? I mean, kids are getting pregnant. Let's hand them condoms. Well, you're condoning that activity, you know. Of course, did we have people that were pregnant, you know, in high school? Absolutely we did. There was a girl who had a locker inside next to me, and she had a baby. But you know what? That was big news.
Yeah.
Today, it's this norm. It's not the exception. Right. So did we have that? Absolutely we had that. But I think our society is pushing on our lawmakers and our society. I think that whole teleological model is pushing on the deontological model in order to make more and more acceptable. But the mind does not, it always knows, and it just can't erase that.
So then how does the Christian ethic, or does the Christian ethic differ from the secular humanist ethic or the atheist ethic?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and speaking separate models, the Christian ethic is for Christians. Speaking, the secular ethic is for those who are not Christians. Speaking in just plain schools, but God's ethic is for everybody. Okay, but if you want to just break down on paper in the schools, that's on here. Okay. But having said that, repeat that one more time.
The ethics for Christians and ethic for secular humanists or atheists, are they different?
They absolutely are. Because one is duty-centered and one is end-centered,
right, okay.
What it comes down to is that for the Christian, the end does not justify the means. For the non-Christian, the end does justify the means. And when you break that down to the bottom line, it comes down to, and you see this in the Terri Schiavo case, okay? Everyone was saying, you know, quality of life versus sanctity of life. And that's what it boils down to. One saying, that it boils down to just that. No matter what the issue is, stem cell research, when you're talking about, when you're talking about abortion, when you talk about euthanasia, quality of life versus sanctity.
Because we see this a lot. I mean, mm-hmm. we hear this a lot, but we just don't recognize it. We don't recognize what's happening. We don't recognize that this is an end-centered ethic instead of the other one.
That's correct. Duty-centered.
Duty-centered.
Right.
Because, it's so obvious, and because it's creeping, like you were saying, it's creeping more and more into our society. Because, for instance, like you were saying, Terri Schiavo, it's now, instead of the fact that she's a human being made in the image of God, it's like, well, she can't function as a human.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to functionality instead of the fact that she was made in the image of God.
Right. Now, that raises a great point. That's a great point. She was made in the image of God. All men, there's a reason why the Bible says we're not to curse man and we're not to take an innocent life. Why? The reason being is because all men and women are made in the image of God. Hence, we should not take another life and we should not curse another human being for that reason.
Right. Now, I want you to clarify a couple of things because, you know, I know this is confuse other people because it still confuses me. What's the difference between ethics and morality?
Okay. Great question again. I love this question. you start on the left, okay? Start on one side, and we're going to talk about a world. We talked about man and God, okay? You always start with either man and God. You're either going to look to man or you're going to look to God for your ethic, ultimately. But you start with man or God. That funnels down to your worldview. Your worldview then determines your ethic. And then your ethic determines your morality. And in a sense, I guess you could say your morality is acting out that ethic. So while they could be used interchangeably, your morality is ultimately going to be based on what your ethic is, which comes through your worldview, which is either based on God or man. So in other words, let's say you're God. If your ethic's based on God, then what that means is that it's based on an absolute truth. Is murder, is abortion, is homosexuality, is it right or is it wrong? Where the man-centered is relative, depends on who's in control. Might is right. So whoever's got the ear of the world, they're going to say this is right. That could change tomorrow, as we saw in the elections. You know, wherever that goes, you know, where is it, you know, that that can fluctuate. That's relative. Relativism says is what's right for me is right for me. It said what relativism says is that we can know right or wrong, but what is right for me is right for me, and what is right for you is right for you. So we really can't say what's right for me is wrong for you. So I know that sounds confusing, but the bottom line comes down to everyone's morality is ultimately the difference between morality and ethic is that they're connected. But your morality is really how you're acting out or how you're legislating or where your thought process ends at. There's your morality, and then there's do I curse you out or do I give you a hug, say I'm sorry.
This is another one that confuses me. And it's the difference between ethics and values. And the reason I ask this is because I remember when I was growing up, they actually taught ethics in school, in public school. And a lot of that's being replaced. If they teach, a lot of them just don't teach anything at all. There's no ethics at all. But some of them are starting to replace it with something called values. Instead of ethics, it's now values. What's the difference?
Exactly. Everyone loves values. Because you see, you have family values. I have family values. You know, grow up, we have pasta every Sunday. And we eat together, no matter what. Doesn't matter if it's Super Bowl. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that takes precedent over the Super Bowl or anything else as it is. You know. But that's a family value. You know. Now my wife comes from a German family. And you know what? That's not a value. They do other things that are a value for them. You know, and I'll speak again from a Catholic family, Christian or a Catholic Italian family, you know, family is big. And I think that's just true of most Italian families. Just family is huge. And so that's a value. Okay, but you may have other places where that's not so much of a value. But my point comes down to this: values can change. Okay, values can fluctuate, and so that's why society loves it. Because if I say if it's immoral, then immoral members got to be a standard, and a standard don't change.
Yes, but you know, also it sort of brings into focus what you were saying earlier that we're moving toward that end center. I mean, the end justifies the means center ethic. So we're removing the ethic, the absolute ethic, and we're going to this other ethic where, you know, okay, the end justifies the means.
Right, the frog in the kettle. We're absolutely are heading there. And I think 9/11 was a wake up call for our country.
Right.
Because we said, you know what, man, let's just. And I remember saying in the 90s, good that the elections and things have gone there, because I saw sliding down the slope, and I said something needs to take place to wake this nation up.
Right.
It didn't. They just kept sliding twice as fast. But 9/11 was indisputable. Whether you like it or not, you can't just close your door to your house, turn your TV off, and go to sleep, because it might blow up tomorrow.
Right.
That changes people's minds a little bit more about what reality is all about.
You may have a hard time believing this, but the show, we have come to the end of the show. Time has gone by.
You're
that
kidding
fast.
Me.
Oh. And I thank you for joining the show. If you have any questions about the show, questions about Christianity, give me a call. Go to my website. Until next time, goodbye and God bless.